Live and Lansing, Jack Ebling is on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back. Jack Ebling here, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. Very happy to welcome in our first guest for Hour 2, Mark Nixon, Communications Director for the Lansing Board of Water and Light. Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm great, Jack. How's it going?
It's going fine. And before we start talking about Silver Bells in the City, we've just put a new issue of Sport Magazine out, and we have another one which is going to be hot on its heels. And I highly recommend a couple of pieces that Mark Nixon has written for us on a couple guys named Dwayne in this community, very well known, Dwayne Vernon and Dwayne Stuhlmaker. And if you think you know them, I guarantee you're going to learn something special about those two guys. And I hope you had as much fun writing that as I did reading it.
Jack, it was a dream. I've known these two guys for well over 25 years, and you know, it was a real pleasure, and I give you all the credit for coming up with the idea. It was just a great pleasure to be able to sit down with each of them and then both of them together and learn more about their amazing loyalty to the MSU Spartans. So it was a great treat for me, and I thank them, and I thank you for making it possible.
Their connections all the way back to Biggie Munn I thought were fascinating, and we never did exactly come up with the number of hairs that Dwayne Stuhlmaker has cut, but I like to have a nickel for every time he's had someone in the seat over those 50 plus years. So
yeah, over 50 years, I can imagine it probably numbers in the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of millions. I really don't know. I think you actually came up with how many hairs are on a human head, but it's probably in the millions by now.
Well, how many are on my head isn't how many on a normal head, I can tell you that. I want to talk to you about the 26th annual Silver Bells, and of course, the Lansing Board of Water and Light, a principal supporter of this and a sponsor for, I guess, since this program really began. What do you remember about the first Silver Bells and how it's different from now, Mark? You've been in this area a long time.
Well, first of all, I'd have to say that it's always been magical. And the thing that I remember most in the early years, it was obviously a lot smaller, but you can almost feel a tradition beginning and building. And every year since then, it's just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And you know, I was just thinking about this tonight, Jack. This is probably as close to Disney World as downtown Lansing's ever going to get.
Yeah.
It really has that kind of magical quality.
Yeah, if you've been to Disney World and you've seen the Electric Light Parade that closes every day there, it is indeed magical. And for people who've never seen it, you see the kids with their mouths wide open for an hour or more. But in this case, we had 125,000-plus people last year in downtown, and I guess now the estimates are it could be 150,000. Sometimes it depends on the weather, but that could be an amazing start to a very important holiday season economically.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it just means, and it bodes so well for downtown Lansing, which you know has gone through and is going through a real renaissance. And I think it really allows people in our surrounding communities to take a second and long look at what is going on downtown. It really is quite a vibrant downtown community, not just during the workday, but afterwards. So I think people really do take a second look. And by the way, I have to say, as you mentioned electric lights, I understand that there's a minimum requirement of 4,000 lights that must be on each float. So I can't do the math, but 50, 60 plus units, we're talking lots of lights.
You know, we talk about Lansing's renaissance, and I really had never spent any time in downtown Lansing. I was at Michigan State for 6 years, but I never really spent any time downtown until I started working at the Lansing State Journal back in 1978. And at that point, you were already there, right? You beat me by a few years.
Yeah, I was there by 73. That's
okay.
Correct.
All right. But the first time that I ever remember Lansing being a place that I would have said to someone, you know what, I'd like to see this place in 5 years, or I'd like to see this place in 10 years, was when you and a group really got behind Adopt a River. And I think that maybe that was just the first seed. And then, of course, David Hollister and the ballpark and everything that's happened. And now for Lansing to be number 7 in the nation in terms of job growth, I never thought I would see that.
I am just I'm so pleased and maybe a little bit surprised, because you never know how quickly these things are going to come. But I have to tell you, Jack, I have family and friends who have left this community, lived other places, and come back, and they are just in awe of the things that are going on downtown. We're talking about the Ottawa Station being transformed into a headquarters for Accident Fund, the great things that are along the River Trail. I mean, it really is truly, you know, I mentioned magical earlier. It is almost magical. I mean, yeah, are you going to come down and you're going to see San Antonio or New York City? No, but we really do have something going very, very special. And, you know, Silver Bells, to me, is just kind of one of those indicators of a community that really has a self-identity and has a self-awareness of how great it can be.
And that was not always the case, I would say, until somewhat recently. I heard a lot of people, when they would be asked where they're from, they wouldn't identify Lansing. They didn't have the kind of pride that some other communities in this state and in the Midwest have. And now I'm starting to see it more. I don't know if some of it is Michigan State basketball. I don't know what it's all about. But I can tell you that over the last 5 years, there's been a metamorphosis here, and Silver Bells is just one aspect of it.
Right. I would have to give credit to a lot of those, what I call urban pioneers. Some people call them entrepreneurs. These are young folks who have, much younger than me, who have decided that Lansing is going to be their home, and they're going to live there, they're going to work there, and they are really investing a lot of time and energy and sweat equity into making the downtown a wonderful place.
This area was incredibly lucky in terms of what could have happened with General Motors. Between the bridge loan and the decision with plants here, this could have had more aspects of Flint than we would like to admit right now. But I would agree with you 100% that the energy that drives this city is for people who are 35 and under. And if you've never been to Grand River Connection, or you've never spent any time downtown with those people, I mean, it's a dizzying array of ideas presented on a daily basis, and they're not going anywhere.
That's correct. And the synergy between the different parts of the community that is of Lansing is really interesting. You know, we all know and recognize the wonder that is Old Town, which was basically a ghost town, you know, maybe 20, 25 years ago.
Right.
But that kind of synergy has now caught on in downtown Lansing. And I have to say, some of the same people that have caught on and are really making a commitment in Old Town are actually shifting their focus to Rio Town. And I think that's fascinating. I mean, they just see, it's almost like a kind of a pioneer spirit, you know, what's over the hill? What are we going to do next?
Yeah, and I guess the answer to the question is, how do you rebuild a city? You do it one building at a time, and you do it one area at a time. And obviously we have seen what's happened to Old Town, as you suggest, the transformation. We've seen what's happened in downtown, and by no means do we have a perfect situation. We have a ton of work to do. But Rio Town was one of the great abandoned areas in our city, and, of course, the Board of Water and Light playing a very important role in that resuscitation. What can you tell us about that in terms of a time frame? We've talked with Peter Lark about this, but where do we stand right now with the cogeneration plant in Rio Town?
Well, Jack, I have to say that the stuff that's going on now isn't real sexy. It's, you know, it's working through the permitting process that you need from the state in order to get what you need so you can, you know, break ground.
Right.
But I believe that in the next couple of months, we will have all of that necessary paperwork. We will be going to Wall Street for bonding. That's what you need to do, because it's basically a $200 million project. And I understand that the second quarter, sometime mid 2011, we'll be breaking ground, and dirt will start to fly. And at the same time, we're going to be restoring that that grand old Grand Trunk Railroad depot sitting by the tracks there that has a lot of history in and of itself. So I would say probably in the next 6-7 months we're going to see a huge difference.
Well, we look forward to that, and we look forward to Silver Bells Friday night. I will see you there at some point, and maybe we'll talk with Peter on Friday as well.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jack.
All right.